Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am going to cover in this audio Job chapter 29, verses 1 through 25. We'll call this Job's Summary Defense, part 1. I am a righteous man. Job has finished dealing with his three friends, or they've finished talking to him. They've made the case, Job, God judges sin. He blesses righteous people. He judges sinful people. And since you are obviously being judged, you are therefore sinful. So fess up. Tell us what you've done wrong. Tell God what you've done wrong, and he'll quit punishing you. Now, of course, that's entirely wrong, and Job knows it's wrong. And the reason he knows it's wrong is because he knows he hasn't done anything to deserve all the pain he's suffering. So he's thinking, there's got to be another reason why this is happening to me. It's not because I did anything wrong. Now, Job continues to maintain that God is a righteous God. He does punish, in general, evil, but not all the time, because Job has gone through in his previous discourses saying that a lot of times you can see the wicked prosper. But in the end, the wicked are punished, but it just doesn't happen automatically. And of course, he wants to make that point to prove to his false friends that because God does not judge sin automatically, that helps my case when I'm trying to say that I am not sinning because I'm suffering, because there's a lot of wicked people that prosper and they're not sinning. Well, now I am suffering, but that doesn't mean I'm sinning, because it's not a one-to-one correspondence between sin and judgment and righteousness and being blessed. So that's his basic argument that he's going to make. Well, to make his case, he's first going to have to say he's a righteous man. Now, when he says righteous, that doesn't mean he's sinlessly perfect like Adam was before he ate the fruit. It just means he hasn't done anything wrong to the degree, to the extent that it would warrant such horrible things happening to him. And remember what's happened to him already. He's lost all of his property. He's lost his children, all of his sons, all of his daughters, all 10 of them. He's also lost his health. He's covered in boils, scraping himself. He's got some shrewish wife who's told him he ought to just curse God and die. He does have that small consolation. And so we begin now in Job 29, verses 1 through 6. And Job again took up his discourse and said, "Oh, that I were as in months gone by, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the prime of my days, when the friendship of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, and my children were around me, when my steps were bathed in butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil." Basically, Job is saying, oh, the good old days. And they were good compared to what he was going through now, and he was longing for them, and I don't blame him. I'd feel the same way. Job said when things were good, before his calamity fell, God watched over him, his lamp shone over my head. The allusion is probably to the lamp that hung from the ceiling, which shone on the heads of guests. As Adam Clark says, Job longed for the time when he was the guest of God. And in general, lamp stands for the outward prosperity from God's favor, as Gill and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. So when God's lamp shone over my head, when God was shining prosperity on me, and by his light I walked through darkness, I had wisdom, I had guidance. As I was in the prime of my days, I was young, I was vigorous, I was strong. When the friendship of God was over my tent, as the NIV puts that, when God's intimate friendship blessed my house. When the Almighty was yet with me, of course the implication is the Almighty's not with him anymore, because God has sort of left him, hasn't he? Left him in the dark, dark night of the soul. When the Almighty was yet with me and my children were around me, before they all got killed by that windstorm in chapter 1, when my steps were bathed in butter. Now, this is a strange expression. The NIV has, when my steps were drenched with cream. The Holman Christian Study Bible has, when my steps were bathed in cream. What does it mean? Well, John Gill suggests this. Job's cattle produced such a vast quantity of milk that when his servants brought it from the fields to the dairy, in other words, to the house, the servants' milk pails ran over in such abundance that Job could not step out of his house and take a walk in his fields, but he stepped into puddles of milk, of which butter was made. My steps were bathed in butter. Well, there's another possibility, that Job had such an abundance of milk or butter that he could wash his feet in it. Verse 6 says, when my steps were bathed in butter, New American Standard. The Holman Christian Study Bible has, when my feet were bathed in butter. So the idea is, I bathe my feet in milk from which butter is made. instead of using the ordinary water. In other words, I was prosperous as I could be, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil. John Gill suggests that this oil may be had from the flinty rock, olive trees growing on hills, mountains, and rocks which yield oil in great abundance. That makes sense, because normally oil doesn't flow out of rocks unless you're talking about modern-day petroleum. And so the picture, if you will, picture the olive trees growing on the hills and the rocky soil, and the olive oil comes from those olive trees. We go down to Job 29, verses 7 through 10. Job continues, "When I went out to the gate of the city." And by the way, Job here, who's he talking to? Well, he's probably talking to his three false friends again. Of course, he knows God's listening. "When I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves, and the old men arose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to their palate." Now, Job says in verse 7, "When I went out to the gate of the city," the gate of the city is where legal decisions and business was carried on, as is well known in the Old Testament. So Job is talking about when I went back to my old stomping ground, where I was a big shot, a judge. "When I took my seat in the square," as John Gill says, Job here speaks of himself as a civil magistrate, as a judge upon the bench, who had a seat or a throne erected for him to sit upon while he was hearing and trying causes. While Job was doing that, while he was being a judge in the city gate, "the young men saw me and hid themselves." The NIV translates that as "the young men stepped aside until Job seated himself," as James Fawcett Brown say. The Holman Christian Study Bible has "the young men withdrew themselves." In other words, they're showing Job deference, which of course is honor, and Job has no honor anymore. He's looked at as a stinking wreck of a human being that nobody cares about anymore. So the young men hid themselves, or they stepped aside, they withdrew, and then the old men arose and stood. Of course, that's a universal sign of respect. Verse 9, "the princes stopped talking." Well, they stopped talking so that they could hear Job's opinion. As Gill puts it, they were in court before Job came in and were either talking with one another about indifferent matters, or were giving their opinion in a case before them. Job walks in, hush, everybody is quiet. Respect. "They put their hands on their mouths," the old men did, or the princes did, excuse me, the princes, the chiefs, the big shots of the city, whatever city that was. "They put their hands on their mouths." Now, the NIV Study Bible says about this, quote, "some ancient cultures required people to literally hold their hand over their mouth to show respect and honor to the ruler. It was the custom in Job's day to remain quiet until the leading official had spoken. We follow much the same protocol today when a presiding judge enters a courtroom or the President of the United States appears to make a public statement. Silence recognizes the importance of the authority figure." So that might refer to this practice of putting hands on the mouth. That might refer to a practice that we don't do today, and so it sounds a little bit strange. Verse 10, "the voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to their palate," or to the top of their mouth. And so that's basically repeating. Verse 10 is repeating verse 9. Everybody got quiet when Job walked in. We go to Job 29, verses 11 through 17. Job continues, "when they," that means the big shots in the city gate, "when they heard me, they blessed me, and when they saw me, they spoke well of me. For I rescued the poor man who cried out for help, and the fatherless child who had no one to support him. The dying man blessed me, and I made the widow's heart rejoice. I clothed myself in righteousness, and it enveloped me. My just decisions were like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I examined the case of the stranger. I shattered the fangs of the unjust and snatched the prey from his teeth." Job here in verses 11 through 17 is trying to say, I didn't do anything wrong to justify all this pain and suffering that I'm going through. Won't you listen to me, you three false friends of mine? You knew me when I was a big shot and when everybody loved me. Name the time that somebody blackened my reputation. You can't do it, Eliphaz. You can't do it, Bildad. You can't do it, Zophar. I am innocent. Verse 11, "when they," the big shots in the gate, "heard me, they blessed Job." Now, some people might say, well, why is Job going on so much talking about his good deeds? Is he boasting? Is he bragging? He has to in this case, like Paul had to boast before the Corinthians because he was being trashed. Well, Job is being trashed by his three false friends who keep telling him he's a rotten, miserable sinner. So he's not boasting, he's defending himself. He's explaining why he used to be honored, which again tends to prove his innocence. He's continuing his argument with the false friends. He's saying to them, in case after case, he has done exactly the opposite of that which would have brought so much judgment. So explain to me, false friends, why all this stuff has come down on me. I have done nothing but good. I don't deserve this. In his defense, Job says in verse 12, "For I rescued the poor man who cried out for help." One of my commentators says that while other officials may have used their position to pad their wallets or their power base, Job used his office to serve. Oh, that's unique. Serving the people? And the fatherless child who had no one to support him. There's the widows and the orphans again. To take care of widows and orphans was the job of judges and magistrates, and Job did his job. Job made the widow's heart rejoice in verse 13. Job is acting toward the widow. He had acted toward the widows exactly the opposite of what Eliphaz had said concerning Job. In Job 22, verse 9, Eliphaz, one of the three false friends, said this, "Job, you have sent widows away empty, and the strength of the orphans has been crushed." No, he didn't. Eliphaz is accusing Job of lying, and Job is saying no. But you got the facts wrong, Eliphaz. Verse 14, "I clothed myself in righteousness, and it enveloped me." That's an extreme way of saying, I'm innocent. My just decisions were like a robe and a turban. How were his just decisions like a robe? Now, this robe is probably a purple robe, a kingly type robe. The pulpit commentary says that his decisions were like his necessary clothes. They were a part of him, just like his clothes were. That's one way you can look at it. Also, the Benson commentary, Matthew Benson, says that his just decisions were like a robe, and that robe would be an ornamental robe, a purple robe, a beautiful robe. And so his just decisions made him look beautiful. Job looked upon his honor as a greater ornament than a purple robe. And his just decisions were like a turban, he says in verse 14. Again, the old translations have a diadem, the modern translations have turban, but the idea is it's some kind of a headpiece that gives Job honor that the average person doesn't have. And so Job's justice stood out. Verse 15, "I was eyes to the blind, those who didn't know the way in the Arabian desert." Job furnished with guides, as Adam Clark suggests, is what he means by that. Or maybe he just gave out advice. "I was feet to the lame, those who were worn out and couldn't walk." Job sat on camels, according to Adam Clark. Verse 16, "I was father to the needy," Job says. "I examined the case of the stranger." Now, that's the Holman Christian Study Bible translation. Other translations have it this way. The NIV says, "I took up the case of the stranger." And, of course, a stranger is a proselyte, someone who's not a part of the community, who's a foreigner, in other words. "I took up the case of the stranger." Now, the reason that that would be especially mentioned by Job is because a lot of times when you are a foreigner, you don't have as many rights as a native person. I was a foreigner in China for 23 years. I can speak to that. I tiptoed very carefully. I was very careful to have my passport when I needed it and to hide the Bibles behind my back when the policeman opened the door unexpectedly at 9 o'clock at night to give me a little quiz, a little questionnaire, scaring the ever-loving blazes out of me. I wouldn't have been scared if I was in America, but it's different when you're a foreigner. And so, but Job says, "I looked after the foreigner. I examined his case." Remember, he's a judge now in the gate. Now, there are other translations besides this idea of Job investigating cases brought by strangers. Here's another one, the God's Word translation, that backs up the Holman Christian Study Bible. "I was father to the needy. I carefully investigated cases brought by strangers." All right, so that's one option, investigating cases brought by strangers. But another way of translating this verse is the KJV, "The cause which I knew not, I searched out." NASB, "I investigated the case which I did not know." Well, if you take that translation, that means that Job searched out hard legal cases, examined them closely, and then, now I see the merits of the case, and now I know what justice is. And so, let's take the NASB. "I investigated the case which I did not know." In other words, the case I didn't understand. I see the facts. I don't know what the law is. I don't know how the facts fit the law. Some legal cases are darn hard. And on this translation, Job is saying, "I look for justice. I didn't take the easy way out. I didn't go the way the that a bribe would have told me to go. I search for justice. Well, either way, he's either defending the stranger and the foreigner, or he is diligently seeking out justice. Either way, he was a just man. He was righteous. Verse 17, Job says, I shattered the fangs of the unjust and snatched the prey from his teeth. Now, that word fangs is translated fangs here in the Holman Christian Study Bible. In the NASB, it's jaws. I shattered the jaws of the unjust and snatched the prey from his mouth. Well, fangs and jaws, that's a little bit different. When I think of fangs, I think of a snake. I snatched the prey from the snake. Could be. John Gill says it's jaws, like the NASB has. The jaw teeth, the grinders, they go along the bottom of a jaw. Adam Clark says it's jaws, like breaking the jaws of a beast of prey which comes into a sheepfold. Grab the lion, break its jaws. That's a good image. The NIV has fangs. The Holman Christian Study Bible has fangs. So if it's that, I guess you can picture a snake grabbing the prey. I like jaws better. We go to Job 29, verses 18 through 20. Job continues, Then I thought, I shall die. And when he says then, he's talking about in his days of prosperity before the calamity came upon his head. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. Ah, the good old days. Job says, I thought back then I shall die in my nest. The NIV translates that as I shall die in my own house. That's the best way to die, is it not? You're around your friends, you're around your family, you're around your furniture that you're familiar with, you're lying in your own bed. That's the way to go. So Job's thinking, well, things are going so good, when I die, it's even going to be good. I shall multiply my days as the sand, and my death's going to be a long way off because my days are going to be as many as the sand. And if you start counting little grains of sand on the beach, boy, you go a long way. And so Job is saying, I'm going to live a long time. He says, in the good old days, my root is spread out to the waters. You see a tree. I think they probably didn't have cypress trees there, but if you have a cypress tree, a cypress tree loves to send its roots down to the water, and pretty soon the roots start growing up in the water. But any tree will do that. It sends its roots to the water. And so Job uses that as a metaphor of his life. He says, my root is spread out to the waters. In other words, the bottom part of my life is sucking water up for nourishment, and dew lies all night on my branch. And at night, the upper part of my body, of my life, I've got dew. I got water up. I got water down. I didn't mean to make that sound so literal as to talk about his body. I meant to say Job's life. He's got water. He's got sustenance. Verse 20, my glory is ever new with me. What is his glory? It's probably Job's temporal honor among men, as Gill and the NIV Study Bible suggest. After all, if we go back to Job chapter 1, we'll see what he had. His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. That man was the greatest of all the men of the East. He was loaded. He had lots of glory. And he said, in the good old days, my bow is renewed in my hand. A bow is a symbol of strength. A bow was a warlike instrument that took strength to pull it. So his bow was in his hands. That means he was a strong man. Could be referring to his political and legal authority, his authority as a civil magistrate, could be referring to his prosperity rather than his strength. They all sort of go together, but the idea is clear. I was strong, I was prosperous, I had authority, times were good. We go now to Job chapter 29, verses 21 through 25, and we will finish this chapter. Job continues, Men listen to me with expectation, waiting silently for my advice. After a word from me, they did not speak again. My speech settled on them like dew. They waited for me as for the rain and opened their mouths as for spring showers. If I smiled at them, they couldn't believe it. They were thrilled at the light of my countenance. I directed their course and presided as chief. I lived as a king among his troops, like one who comforts those who mourn. Verse 21 says that men listened to Job expectantly, waiting silently for his advice. He was honored and respected. Verse 22, after he gave that advice, after a word from me, they did not speak again. They didn't need to. They didn't need to say, please explain that, Job. Job's words were so wise and true, they were understood immediately as the very font of wisdom. My speech, Job says, settled on them like dew. Of course, dew is comforting, it's refreshing, it's gentle. God's Word translation has it, my words gently settled on them. And they sat there and they listened to him and said, oh, the dew is on my face, how refreshing. They waited for me as for the rain and opened their mouths as for spring showers. Not only dew do they get, but they get rain poured on them. That is refreshing to be caught in a spring shower. Nothing more refreshing from that, as long as the lightning's not there. If I smiled at them, they couldn't believe it. Oh, I've been favored by a smile from Job. The NIV translates that, when I smiled at them, they scarcely believed it. The KJV says, I laughed on them, they believed it not. Well, that's a lousy translation, at least for modern ears. The NIV is better. When I smiled at them, they scarcely believed it. Home of Christian Study Bible, if I smiled at them, they couldn't believe it. The news was too good to be true, as Adam Clark put it. I got a smile from Job. They were thrilled at the light of my countenance. The NIV has it, the light of my face was precious to them. The NASB says, the light of my face they did not cast down, which is obscure, doesn't clearly state what happened here. They were thrilled at the light of my countenance, the light of my face. Verse 25, Job says, I directed their course. In other words, he gave advice in civil affairs. I presided as chief. I was the chief judge there in the gate. I lived as a king among his troops, like one who comforts those who mourn. Living as a king, as Home of Christian Study Bible NASB has it, I lived as chief among his troops. Job presided in councils and courts. He had prestige as well as material prosperity. He lived like one who comforts those who mourn. Now, there's two options here. It could be that Job is going around visiting the surviving relatives of a deceased person, as Gill suggests, but I think we probably should tie the last part of that verse with the first part of the sentence there. I lived as a king among his troops, like one who comforts those who mourn. A king would go around to the family of deceased soldiers in his army, and he would console the surviving relatives. And I think that's what Job is referring to. Well, so now we have Job's summary defense, the first part of it, and basically we can summarize that by Job saying this, I am a righteous man. I mean, he hits it hard, and he does a good job of defending the simple prospect that I haven't done anything to deserve this suffering, guys. So, having finished Job chapter 29, we are now prepared to go to Job 30 in our next audio, and we will continue to look at Job's summary defense, part 2. I hope you stay tuned for that, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.